listeners, welcome to Western Section Podcasts, a podcast for wildlifers. I am your host, workshop manager Ivan Parr. I am here with my co-host, student affairs, co-chair, and North Coast chapter rep, Lizzie Meisman. And for this podcast, we are introducing the candidates for 2021 Western Section President-elect, Randy McCormick and Katie Smith. Don't forget, votes are due January 15th. I am here with my co-host, the student affairs co-chair and North Coast chapter rep, Lizzie Meisman.
Hey, folks.
Today's guest is Randy McCormick. Yes, the Randy McCormick from McCormick Biological, who is one of the two nominees for the Western Section President-elect. Welcome, Randy.
Hi, all. I'm really happy to be here.
So, Randy, we are going to start off with a few of our questions, then we're going to move on to the questions that the members sent to us to ask you. So I'm going to start with a real difficult question, and I'm actually very curious to know what the answer to this is, and it is, what is your favorite animal?
So this is way harder than you might think. There are so many animals, but my favorite animal is the blunt-nosed leopard lizard. I had to think about it a little bit, but every year when blunt-nosed leopard lizard survey season comes around, I start getting excited about when they might be seen. And I just never get tired of them. I never get tired of them. So that's my favorite animal.
So you must enjoy the heat a little.
I like the heat, but you know, blunt-nosed leopard lizards don't like it when it's really, really hot. So I'm the same way. They have a temperature range that's, you know, they're optimal. So that's pretty comfortable for me too.
Great.
And what was your first job? This can be first job ever. This can be first job in the wildlife field or both.
So that was hard because I've been working since I was about 14 years old. That was a paper route. I don't know that that really counts. My first job in, that's something that was more related to wildlife was as an environmental technician at a consulting company here in Bakersfield. So that was a long time ago.
All right. And our third standard question is, and this can be pretty open-ended. You can interpret this question any way you'd like, but what was the best piece of advice you've received?
That one was really hard because I don't remember like specific pieces of advice from any specific person. But I think it kind of all boils down to be yourself. You don't have to be anybody else except for yourself. And that has served me pretty well. I feel, you know, okay with myself. And one would hope you get to that point at some point and hopefully sooner than I did. It took me a really long time to be comfortable in my own skin.
All right. So your advice to the listeners, be yourself.
Be yourself.
All right. Now, moving on to the questions that we received from our poll. Lizzie, why don't you take us away?
Thanks. In under 3 minutes, explain who you are, your role within the Western Section Board, and your profession.
All right. So who I am. I am a native Californian. However, I have not lived in California my whole life. I've lived in a lot of different places. I've lived in Santa Barbara, San Diego, Reno, Nevada. So I've lived around the section a little bit. I also lived in Texas for a little while. I come from a single parent household. I was the first in my family to go to college and still the only one who's graduated from college in my immediate family, which doesn't count my husband and kids. My husband and kids have gone to college as well, which I'm very happy for. It took me a long time to get through college. I had to pay for myself. I had to pay my own way. I didn't really know what I wanted to do at 18. I didn't get a lot of guidance when I was younger and in high school about what you could do. But I had good family behind me and I was encouraged to figure out, you know, what it was that I thought was my path. I've always been a really hard worker, and that served me well because it took 10 years to finish my bachelor's degree. It took 10 years because I changed my major, because I didn't pick the major that probably was good for me the first time through. I quit for a year and then went back pretty much with a vengeance. At one time during my 10-year bachelor's degree, I had four jobs, just trying to stay in school. it was a struggle, but I grew up as an athlete. I played a lot of sports when I was in, when I was a kid, and that really helped me focus on what the goal was when I was in college, even though I kept hitting setbacks. But I was really happy to have had that background. So I became a consultant after I got a part-time job, which turned into a full-time job as a an environmental technician. I was encouraged to look at wildlife and look at biology as a potential career by one of the wildlife biologists at the company where I worked. And when I looked into it, I was like, I think this is probably the thing for me. So that really stuck. And that's how I got into consulting. I've been in consulting for 30 years, over 30 years, a long time. I've really enjoyed the variety in consulting. I did have a time back in the 90s when I almost quit because consulting was, it can be a really high pressure field. And it was at a time when I was, starting a family and that kind of thing. And I thought I had to think long and hard about staying in this profession. But I got a lot of support from my family, from my husband, and ended up opening this business, McCormick Biological, back in 2001. We are celebrating our 20th year anniversary. Actually, it was on January 1st. So that's pretty exciting. And when I started this company is, if I had known then what I know now, I don't think I would have called it McCormick Biological. However, we got it now. So it's an expression of who I am as far as I want doors to be open for people. I use this company to open doors for people. We've had as many as 50 employees for seasonal, and we get college students, we get all kinds of people, different backgrounds, people who are re-entering the career field after being at home, after teaching, all kinds of different people. So it is partially an expression of who I am.
Great. And just to clarify for the listeners, when you say you would have named it something else, you mean you would have taken your name out of the title of the company?
I would not have used my name in the title of the company. When I first started, I didn't think that it was going to, I didn't have any aspirations to have a company that had more than a few employees. And now I think it grew, and I'm happy with the growth, but I would have liked to have had it more generic.
Before we move on, actually, would you share what you do on the Western Section Board, please?
Oh, good point.
Sure, yes. Okay, so I am the San Joaquin Valley Chapter Rep. I took on that position when our previous chapter rep was elected president of the section. And I have been served on committees like the conference committee, the professional development committee. I've done ad hoc committees, and I've really enjoyed my service as the chapter rep.
So if you were to become president in 2021, what is the single biggest item you would like to tackle?
That's a hard question. I think that it's going to be really challenging to balance challenging how we've always done things while keeping our focus on our purpose. And that's not an item, but I think that it is a challenge that I'm aware of. It's not a single item, just a perspective.
Could you elaborate maybe a little bit on what you mean by changes?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with question number 8 in increasing our efforts as far as diversity and inclusion. And I want us to, I really would have us keep a perspective on what those changes might mean and keeping our eye on the purpose of the organization. They're important. It's really important. And I'll elaborate on that question a little bit more later.
Great. Thank you.
And what do you envision for the 2022 conference?
For the 2022 conference, I think I would pursue a general theme of connections. We have a lot of challenges facing our profession. We need to address conservation in light of climate change. As the administration changes, we have a lot of people who participate in our conference and in our section who are employees of the government. And sometimes administration changes can mean changes in the way they do their job. Culture is changing. And I think that having a theme of connections would be a good way to look at our relationships with each other. I think we need to maintain strong connection between each other as these changes happen. And we also need to look at making new connections so that we are gaining different and new perspectives. We need to be reaching out and help connecting with other disciplines so that we can gain perspective from maybe not just within the wildlife profession. So that's how I see the upcoming conference. It's important. It's important to pick a theme and to pick an approach that can bring people together for the conference. So I like the idea of connections. We've got a lot to consider as far as, you know, every year seems so important, and it is important, but we just need to keep working on creating a vibrant future for our profession, keeping a strong commitment to being professional.
Great. And just to clarify, you're thinking of, you know, demonstrating this through the types of speakers you have or the types of talks that would be chosen?
That's, yes. Demonstrating how important being connected is in the world that we're facing. The types of speakers and the themes of the sessions.
So, Randy, here's a question specifically for you because you're a mom. This member has asked, have you been involved with projects that involve school-age children in working with habitat, natural resources, and related outdoors activity? And do you think it is a way to increase understanding and public support for conservation?
So, I mean, I think there's a simple answer to that question. Yes, it is a way to increase that public support. Public support is really important. So yeah, I've been involved with all kinds of outdoor education. I was a camp counselor for a Girl Scout camp, which was an outdoor education camp, and that was junior high and younger high school age. I've been participating in STEM events for kids for years, and a lot of them were outdoors focused. I judged science fair, which doesn't necessarily seem like it might be outdoor or conservation focused, but it really can be. And I don't know how many people have had involvement with local science fairs, but in local science fairs, they will put you into categories. So I've always tried to steer towards the categories that have more to do with wildlife and plant biology, if I can. And then, you know, really, really trying to encourage the kids that I run into about science. I mean, just having a science background, I think, is really important for kids to be well-rounded. And a lot of times in these events and when we communicate with kids, they're going back and talking to their parents. And having you know, having their parents hear that they're excited about science, I think that is really, really helpful in having, you know, getting some public involvement and public support for science. It's really important. People are interested in what their kids are interested in. And parents will follow their kids. If their kids are, you know, a lot of parents want their kids to find something that ignites their passion. And if their kids come home and say, this is something I really want to do, parents are going to support it. But also, we need to continue that all the way up through high school and college. I am amazed. We go to career fairs as a consultant sometimes, and I'm amazed at how many kids who are, I say kids, how many younger people in college who are biology majors, wildlife majors, anything related, don't realize that they can have a career in an outdoor field. They don't realize that they can get a general biology degree and they can go and get their master's degree and study wildlife out in the field. They're surprised. We run into so many kids who are surprised when they find out that's a real job. And it's like, yeah, it's a real job and it's a great job. It's exciting. It's something different all the time. It's, you know, it's contributing to conservation is looking towards the future. So I really believe that it's not just the younger kids. Younger kids are very important and younger kids will get their parents on board, but we've got to just keep on following that all the way up through.
Thank you, Randy. And how would you ensure, grow, and sustain diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to make the Wildlife Society more accessible to Black, Indigenous, and people of color?
Well, I think that we're really on our way with the official recognition of the diversity committee and having the diversity committee chair with a vote on the board. I think that was a really important step. I think that our biggest challenge now is going to be how to fold that committee in to our larger operations where they can help us recognize the barriers that we might have that we don't even know about, that we don't recognize because we're already sort of, we've got a way of operating and a way of doing things that has worked in the past for us. And we need to find out how do we utilize the committee and different perspectives to identify those barriers. We need to minimize the barriers then we need to do something about it. This is going to take some time and dedication, along with a lot of listening, a lot of hearing, a lot of back and forth listening. So we just need to use the opportunity that the committee will present to us for looking at all of our programs. I also believe that we need to, recognize and honor culture where and when that recognition helps us in gaining different and new perspectives and keep it in an open atmosphere. I believe that we need to get behind a common cause, work together, and continue making the Wildlife Society a stimulating organization for professionals. That the professional development and the workshops that we've been doing are a great way to just keep that interest and keep stimulating the existing professionals to keep improving and getting better. That was one of the things about myself that I didn't really say when I was talking about who I am, but I am a continual learner. I believe in continual learning. I'm always looking for ways to improve things. And I think that as long as you don't change just for change's sake, that it's always good to keep looking at programs and the things that you do to see if there are better ways. If I was the president, I would focus on hearing these voices and acknowledging different people's experiences that would help us in creating an atmosphere that's really welcoming. I want us to be welcoming and not just welcoming, but make connections. We need to make those connections so that we really incorporate the voices into how we're running our programs and how our society is perceived. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
To just clarify, your main points would be in support of DEI efforts would be to basically open up a forum to hear voices whose input would further improve the Professional Development Committee that runs the events and the Diversity Committee.
Exactly. I think that our committees, in the spirit of the word connections, I think that our committees can really feed off of each other. And we really need to be sort of, the way the committees work on the board, it would be very conducive to that because you can serve on more than one committee. So I think that I'm going to steal from plant biology. Well, it's actually wildlife biology too. Cross-pollination between the committees could really be helpful in making sure that the diversity and inclusion is an important part of all of our programs.
All right. I'm going to move on to the next question. Now, the member who submitted this question is clearly paying very close attention because they want to know if you support the bylaw changes and if there are any that you do not support, how you would deal with them differently.
I don't have any issues with any of the bylaws changes. I am especially in favor of the transparency, the move towards more transparency. I think that the board's activities should be evident to everyone, and we serve the members. So that particular bylaws change and direction, I'm really in support of. And I don't have any issues with any of the other bylaws changes.
Excellent. And finally, is there anything else you'd like the members to know about you?
I'm not much of a talker, really. This has been real hard. I'm actually an introvert that's sort of forced myself to become a little bit more of an extrovert. I would be excited to lead the Wildlife Society Western Section, but I'm also open to serving in any way that I can. I view myself as a servant leader. And that means that sometimes I'm in the front, like with my company, and sometimes I'm not in the front. And I am happy either way. I am very interested in encouraging future generations to get into this field if it's their passion, if they're interested in it. Even some people, it takes them a while to figure it out. Obviously, I was one of those people. but I think that with all of the encouragement that I received and mentors in the wildlife profession that I am happy to give back. And I feel like this is one way to give back, but there are many ways.
You want to elaborate a little bit on being a mentor? I know that mentorship is very important to you.
I think that there are lots of different ways of being a mentor. I think just being open to opportunities, you can be a mentor formally and you can be a mentor informally. I think that people who have more experience in the field have an obligation to just be really aware of how they affect people by what they say and by what they do. And it's sometimes a little bit intimidating to know that, you could be influencing someone and what their choices are even in life. But it's an honor when someone does say that you've helped them.
All right. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our interview with President-elect nominee Randy McCormick. We'll be right back with President-elect nominee Katie Smith. For our Get to Know the Board series, we are interviewing nominees for President-elect 2021. And today's guest is the highly esteemed Katie Smith. Dr. Katie Smith, welcome to Western Section Podcast.
Thanks, Ivan. It's great to be here with you guys.
Great to have you. So we are going to start off our podcast by asking you a few questions from ourselves, and then we're going to ask some questions that the members submitted specifically to interview you. So,
excellent.
Our first question is going to be a standard question, and it's a difficult question for many, but probably not a difficult one for you. And that is, what is your favorite animal?
Well, anyone who knows me wouldn't be surprised to hear that my favorite animal is the salt marsh harvest mouse, which is my study species. I've been studying the mouse for about the last decade or so, and I'm a specialist in that. So spend a lot of time thinking about them and chasing them around and poking them and measuring them. So they are an awesome little creature that maybe people outside the Bay don't know a lot about. But if you're ever in the Bay, take some time to peek into the marshes and think about them because they're super awesome.
And what was your first job? It can be field or in general or both.
I was in the first job when I was wrapping up college. I was working at the Sacramento Zoo doing education for the summer camps. And then I ended up staying on the zoo for a while. And I also, right as I was graduating, got a job with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife in the sport fish group. So I was doing bass tagging and sturgeon tagging and angler surveys. And I actually ended up staying with CDFW for about 10 years. But I really loved working at the zoo, and CDFW was also obviously awesome, but it was a great experience to be able to spend time at the zoo. I got to spend the night there. I ran the overnight safari, so I got to sleep in the zoo with the animals. So it was pretty awesome. I would sneak into the snack bar and make myself nachos and then walk around and look at animals at night. It was pretty much the best job ever.
Wow. Well, to be fair to the other nominee, I've elected not to make commentary after your answers, but I will say I didn't know all that about you.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
All right. Our third standard question is, what was the best advice you've ever received? And this could be pretty open-ended. You can say in your career, in life.
I'd say in terms of research is do your data sheets right away. So when you get home from the field, make sure you tidy up your data sheets and fill in any missing information, because it is very hard to go back and fill in the blanks later on if you don't do it right away. I'd also say just in life, just being willing to speak your mind and stand up for yourself, I think is really important. You shouldn't be afraid to have strong opinions and say if you think something is right or wrong, if it feels right to you.
All right. So your advice is number one in our job, fill out your data sheets early.
Yes.
And in life, stand up for yourself, speak up for yourself.
Or for those who need to be spoken up for.
Well, now we're going to move on to the questions from our members. Lizzie, why don't you take us away?
Thanks, Ivan. Katie, in under 3 minutes, would you please explain who you are, what role you serve on the Western Section Board, and what you do for a living?
So my name is Katie Smith. I am a wildlife biologist. I currently am working for WRIA Consulting. It's a firm in the Bay Area, and I work as a wildlife biologist and kind of mouse specialist there. I am also a research affiliate at UC Davis, where I got my PhD in December 2018. So I've continued to kind of partner with my lab there to continue our mouse work collaboratively with the university and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and various other entities. On the board, I am currently a student affairs chair, but I started initially in late 2014 as the board rep for the SAC Shasta chapter. So my first official board meeting on the Western Section Board was the 2015 meeting at the annual meeting. I served as the rep for that for quite some time. In 2015, I started the diversity committee. So I was simultaneously serving as the SAC Shasta rep and the diversity committee chair from 2015 to 2017. And then in 2017, I was asked to step into the chair position for the Student Affairs Committee. And at that time, I handed over the reins of the Diversity Committee and the SAC Shasta rep position to others, and have been serving as the Student Affairs Chair with Lizzie as my co-chair in the past couple of years, which has been awesome. And then I serve on the diversity committee as well. And I've served on the planning committee for the annual meeting for the past few years and various ad hoc committees and whatnot. But primarily focusing on students right now.
So in total, that's about 10 hats or so that you've been wearing for the last couple of years.
Jumping around, yeah. Before I graduated, obviously, you have a lot more flexibility in your schedule when you're still a student. So it was great to be able to kind of jump around and have a lot of experiences on different committees during that period.
All right. Katie, what is the single biggest item you'd like to tackle within the section were you to become the next president-elect?
So this is something I wrote about a little bit when I was nominated for president-elect a couple years ago, but I'd really like to see the section optimize our use of technology to better serve the membership. We have a lot of great services out there. The Constant Contact is really awesome. Candace and Suzanne doing incredible job creating content for that and getting it out on time. But I think we could really be making use of a lot of more tools we have. In terms of communication, this is incredible. This podcast is awesome. And I'm so proud of you two for getting it started up. And we have things like social media. So we have some social media, but it's not, we're not super active on it. Obviously, we're all volunteers here and it can be a lot of work to run social media accounts. That's why a lot of companies hire people to do that. So I've been running the Western Section Instagram since 2016. And I run several Facebook pages and contribute to the Western Section main page. But it is a lot of work and figuring out the best way to kind of run that stuff and to schedule content to go out could help us to reach our members who maybe aren't, or people who are not yet members. One thing I've been focusing on this year is building up a Slack workspace for our students. So I have about 80 students now on there. And for those of you who are not aware of what Slack is, it's kind of a communication program for chatting, and you can make channels and stuff. So we can have a channel for students to ask jobs about career development or jobs about the conference, or just to post fun pictures of animals. One thing I really want to see in terms of like building our communication is getting a listserv created for the students. For right now, we cannot specifically just email all of the students. They just fall into the larger listserv. And so I'd really like to see that. See our website get updated. Our website's great, but I think we can make it a lot more effective. And then also assist Ivan in getting our workshops online, continuing to get online. You've already done a great job of getting them online during these COVID times. And
So in a nutshell, the biggest thing you'd like to tackle is bringing the Western Section up to the 21st century, taking advantage of technology.
Yeah.
All right. Lizzie, what have you got next for us?
Yeah. And what do you envision for the 2022 conference?
So this follows along the same lines as I just talked about in terms of making the best use of the new technology that you have for us. The diversity committee has been discussing for a couple of years how to make our conferences more accessible to folks who maybe can't make it out in person. Maybe people who have to stay home and care for a family member or who are sick themselves, who would still like to be able to at least view our content, if not also interact. And so that's something we've been thinking about for a couple of years, and COVID kind of made this a necessity at this point. So we've kind of been forced into it. And assuming that we have enough vaccine for people and that people are able to get it and that we can have our 2020 be at least somewhat in person, I think it'd be a great opportunity to try to test out a hybrid model where we do have some online for folks who either can't get to the conference because of illnesses or because of other responsibilities, but also have an in-person component. That's also kind of a theme that I've been thinking about, like having this hybrid. You know, we've traditionally, wildlife biology has been kind of a low-tech science where we go out and we count animals, and we write them down in a notebook, but more and more, we have a lot of really cool technologies out there that can assist us with our research and our conservation and our management, such as GIS and, you know, R, remote detection, drones, eDNA, a lot of stuff like that. But there's not a lot of training content out there for some of that stuff. And just because of the way we kind of, like at the conference, we'll have stuff like we'll have an R workshop at the conference, but one R workshop isn't necessarily going to be enough to get someone really started unless they already kind of have a background. So kind of having these hybrid approaches in terms of the conference and workshops, you know, someone can have an introductory R workshop at the conference, and then later on that can be continued on maybe a couple more times in the year and have follow-up workshops virtually to really take advantage of training our members who can't necessarily get these training opportunities elsewhere. So I just like to see that. I think there are people who present at our conferences who are using really cool technology, but I think it seems to me to be underutilized. And I think that we could do a better job of making it more accessible for some of our members.
So ultimately you view the 2022 conference as a way to also upgrade in technology and perhaps have an in-situ, ex-situ type conference where people can remote in and have an in-person experience as well.
Yeah, probably Candace is going to murder me for saying that, but I think it's going to be a great, you know, potential test year, depending on how things go.
All right. Well, I'm going to move on to our next question. Now, this is a big question from one of the members. The member is asking, have you been involved with projects that involve school-age children in working with habitat, natural resources, and related outdoors activity? And do you think it is a way to increase understanding and public support for conservation?
I do think it's very important to engage young kids. It's something that we being the Diversity Committee and the Student Affairs Committee, have discussed and worked toward for quite a while, a number of years. And we have had this desire to, you know, bring the biologists to the classroom or, you know, host hikes for kids or do these various things in our communities. And this is something that we've wanted to kind of plan over the years. And we have tried various things such as reaching out to classrooms in the communities where our annual meetings were occurring and inviting the students to come to the annual meeting and check out the poster session or whatnot. And we have had varying success with the actual execution of that in terms of getting the students to actually make it to the event. We had a pretty strong start on trying to get an in-school program started. And one of our wonderful members, Randy Logson, who passed last year, she was doing really great with the school, but then she passed and we lost all contact with that school. And it really just kind of shows you the infeasibility in a lot of ways of trying to build these community level connections at a regional level organization like we are. And that's, you know, the idea is that eventually we could support the individual chapters in, you know, running these kinds of programs, but it really became clear to me over the past few years in trying to reach out to students in various different ways that it's really difficult to do at this level, especially when we're moving around and having our meetings in different areas every year. And it really became clear that what we need to do is focus more on providing the tools to others to make that happen. So for example, providing curriculums online where if teachers are not finding enough information about endangered species locally or want to know more about wildlife biology, they can come to our website and find handouts or coloring pages or whatnot, information And then maybe find contact information for local chapters to invite out biologists there. But it's, yeah, we tried really hard, but I think the best way we can do is provide high level support, high level content, and support our chapters in that.
So ultimately, even though the Western section is at its core a professional organization, you would value providing high level educational resources to school-age children.
Yeah, and I think we have a lot of members who would love to contribute if they were directed correctly. we just gotta figure out how to enable them to contribute because they want to.
Moving on to our next question, how would you ensure, grow, and sustain diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to make TWS more accessible to Black, Indigenous, and people of color?
So this is something that I mean, beyond just BIPOC folks, I've been really passionate about diversity efforts in our organization for years. I, with a friend, started the diversity committee in 2015 or so, and served as a chair of the diversity committee for several years. And, you know, we started out small, kind of just doing little events here and there, basically at the annual meeting. And kind of recruiting really great people to support the committee. And once we were able to bring in Bianne, who is now the current diversity chair, she's just been going crazy with all the great stuff she's doing in terms of the film that she produced and trying to make our annual meeting content accessible to folks who can't attend the conference. And so I think what I could do is really just support the people who are doing really great work because it's already happening. And we just need to continue to support the people who are doing it. Keep asking questions of the membership, asking them what do they want to see from us, and not assuming that we know what to do to support these members. Make safe spaces for people to express themselves if they're feeling marginalized or unsupported in any way, or if they are enjoying what we're providing, or if it's being effective. Keep challenging when we hear things from our members or from board members or from anyone who is consciously or unconsciously saying or doing things that might be hindering the career development of our underrepresented folks, and letting them know how that might be making people feel. And then keep supporting efforts at the conference. At the conference for the past few years, I've been printing out pronoun stickers, people to add to their badges. We've had our diversity mentoring mixers for students, and people have been really receptive to that. They really enjoyed it and have expressed that it's made them feel more welcome. So it doesn't have to be huge things. It can be things as small as providing pronoun stickers and just putting them on the table. And just people, for some people, just knowing that someone, that the board thought ahead of them and you know, cared enough to just even do just the little things. It doesn't have to be a huge event or a huge gesture. Sometimes little stuff, it goes a long way toward making people feel welcomed and supported. It's all about listening to people, listening to what they're saying, and, you know, not deciding what we think is best, the best way to support people, just asking them what they want and listening and providing that support.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. This next question is also from the members, and it's a big one. They are asking, do you support all the proposed bylaw changes? And if there are changes that you do not support, how would you deal with those issues differently?
I do support them. I think Don did a great job, and other board members did a great job of...
Let me just mention that's Don Yasuda.
Yes, Don Yasuda.
Who is, in fact, our incoming president of the National Wildlife Society.
Don Yasuda, and also potentially our greatest Western Section member of all time, who just does all this great work all the time. So he did a lot of work, as he does every year, putting together these bylaws changes and combing through and finding things that need to be updated or fixed. And I didn't see anything in there that I didn't support. I was actually most excited about the language that is going to make the diversity committee official and codified, which is great to see that the board, you know, is valuing the diversity committee and the work it's doing, and that it, you know, wants to make it, you know, official in our bylaws. So I think that that's very exciting. But yeah, there's nothing in that I didn't necessarily agree with.
Great, thank you. All right, Lizzie, our last question.
Is there anything else you would like the members to know about you?
I guess the only thing I can think is that I love serving on the Western Section Board. It's been since late 2014, early 2015 that I've been a board member, and I really love it. I love being involved and planning events for our members. And it's been super challenging serving as the student affairs chair, just because they're so spread out and there's so much turnover, and the students basically just disappear immediately. You know, when they graduate, they're gone. And so it's hard to keep track of which students are officers and who's graduated yet, and when the boards have turned over at the various schools. So it's been fun trying to figure out ways to better engage the students, to keep track of them and keep in communication with them, because obviously they're super busy, especially this year with COVID. You know, they're trying to juggle school and, you know, via video chat and potentially, you know, be pushed out of the dorms and have to go back to their home where they might, you know, feel like they're exposing their family. So it's a super stressful year. And so trying to find the right balance of keeping them engaged and supported without feeling like you're stressing them out or pushing too much onto them. So that's been fun. I love solving problems. I really like planning events. So that's been one of the great things. And I just like being on the board is such a privilege, just to spend time with people like Ivan and Lizzie. And it's just been one of the most enjoyable parts of my professional life is being on the board. So I would say that's something.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with us today. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak to our members. And thank you all for having me. Absolutely. Thank all of you for tuning in to Western Section Podcast. It has been a pleasure.
We'd like to thank our Oversight Committee, Program Director Cynthia Perrine, and Project Manager Candace Ringer.
And our Podcast Committee, Angela Amlin, Elizabeth Meisman,
and Ivan Parr.
To all of our members, please stay safe and healthy and
be part of something wilder.
And don't forget to vote.